Hey, everyone. This is Mike Cove. I am the curator of mammals here at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, and I'm excited to participate in this conversation with our extraordinary intern, Adrienne Lambert, about her position this summer in the mammalogy unit here at the museum.
Hi, I'm Lisa Gatens. I'm the collection manager in mammalogy here at the Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh, and equally just thrilled to be having this conversation with Adrienne and Mike about her internship and making sure there's space for her.
Hi, my name's Adrienne Lambert. I am an intern in the mammalogy unit this year. I go to UNC Chapel Hill, and I'm a rising junior. I have a major in biochemistry and a minor in biology, and the goal is to become an environmental toxicologist in the future.
And, of course, she'll be working with mammals that realm of environmental toxicology.
Of course.
Right? Bats and shrews and
only mammals.
Maybe dolphins.
Oh, maybe dolphins.
Manatees.
Just maybe.
Okay, so before we get started here and get too deep into our conversations, we would like to acknowledge the Conservation Trust of North Carolina. So the Conservation Trust of North Carolina has had, you know, the brilliant foresight to provide the MAX internship, which is a way to seed diversity into the natural sciences and natural resource management here in North Carolina. And so I just think it was a great opportunity to help us branch out and provide opportunities, funded, paid internships, which is an important caveat here, for underrepresented groups here in the natural sciences, especially STEM and natural resources in North Carolina. And so CTNC has been a huge important partner in this for helping provide the seed funding for this internship. The Museum of Natural Sciences and our volunteer coordinators and internship staff have also been hugely helpful. And so I think we're going to get started. And so I think, Adrienne, I would love to hear how you became interested in conservation. Maybe a little bit more about your background, but yeah. that'll get us going.
Oh, yeah. So for me, I'd always had a kind of like an interest with nature from a really young age. I'd like to like sit in the woods, which doesn't sound very safe, but I'd like to sit in the woods. And I just like to like look
Do
at
the
environment.
Time.
Right. Yeah, you know. And I just look at the environment around me. And it wasn't until I was in third grade that my mom put me in Girl Scouts, and that was the first time I was able to go camping and fishing and hiking and just be able to like actually learn about the nature around me and like be in it. And I think that was like really what kind of set off my passion for wanting to protect the environment and protect the creatures that live in it. So for me, that was probably like the biggest spark into going into conservation. And then as I got older and I went to high school and middle school, I was able to be part of like several programs that allowed me to get more experience in these fields. I got to do summer ventures in high school, which provided me with a month and a half long program where you get to go and pick a subject of your choosing. And I chose aquatic ecology, and I got to go camping and take water samples and look at macroinvertebrates. And it was just like, okay, maybe I don't want to be an aquatic ecologist, but I like the conservation. I like ecology. I like what they're doing with that.
And that's how you started searching more a little into the vertebrate realm and ended at the pinnacle of the vertebrates, the mammals, right?
Because
right?
Exactly. No other animal is quite as good as mammals. But yeah, that was definitely a big point for me. And then I found this internship on Indeed when I was just kind of like scrolling through, and I saw like the job description, and it was talking about, oh, you get to work in the mammal unit, you get to be outside, you'll be doing field work, you're going to help manage the collections, like you get to do specimen prep. And then they're like, we're trying to find people in underrepresented communities to go out and do these sort of fields. And so I was like, oh, that sounds great. And so I applied, And I was lucky enough to get this internship and have the summer of my life.
Summer of your life. Wow. Yeah. That's, oh my gosh.
Just think you're done now. So, okay. If you were going to describe what this internship was like on day to day or from day to day to your family and friends, and I know that I think your mom and dad and sister probably got a daily recap.
Oh, they did.
How do you describe what this internship was? What did you do?
Yeah. So a day to day, I think that's probably one of the reasons why I like environmental work so much and working in the museum. Because like no day was the same. So it was always something different. So
we had a word for that, remember?
Yeah. I forgot the word.
Dynamic.
That's what we're going to call it, dynamic work experience. And it was actually, it was a lot of fun. Like some days we would be in the lab where we would do specimen prep, which is basically where we are. Well, I don't know if I want to get into like the gory details, but we're preparing animals to go into the collection. So we might get them from like conservation centers or people that bring them in. And we prepare them so that they are usable for researchers and for people to do research in the future. So that would be some days. Other days I'd work down in the collection, and I would help put back in specimens that had been checked out by professors or graduate students and figure out how those went back in the collection, and then also figuring out how to put new specimens into the collection. So those would be like more of like the laid back days. I did camera trap data work with Mike, which was really cool. And we would go through and I'd get to identify different species. And then like some other days it'd be like we'd drive to the zoo to pick up elephant tusk.
That was one of the best days
of
my summer as well.
And you know, get VIP access. Just have a great time in a van. And like other days we'd go and see like a raccoon necropsy or go to NC State's campus.
Well,
and
you didn't just see, you participated.
I did participate. It was interesting.
And you learned a lot, right?
I did. I really did. And also how raccoons smell.
Yeah.
But like other days, you know, it would be we would go and we would meet different professors or different researchers and we get to ask them about their research or help them out with the project. And then, you know, near July, it was field work. Lots of field work. And that was definitely a very fun month. Where I was just in different settings, and I think it was a good exposure.
Yeah, awesome. So you did keep mentioning the collection, and so I would love to just put a little plug in there about what the mammal collection is. We are the public museum for the state of North Carolina, and the mammal collection has over 20,000 mammal specimens. And so think about our work at the museum as being the catalog or the library catalog of life on Earth. And we focus specifically on the mammals, but those 20,000 specimens in our collection date all the way back, Lisa, maybe to the 1800s. Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking a few hundred years old in some cases, and all the way up to now, you're preparing specimens. I don't know. I think you did probably this summer, we did a dozen or so specimen preparations. And so, Adrian, those voles that you prepared and cotton rats and what else am I missing?
Bats, chipmunks.
Yep. Free-tailed bats, Brazilian free-tailed bats, shrews. Those are part of your legacy with this summer, right? So those specimens are going to be available for researchers, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years, hopefully into, you know, as long as humans are cataloging biodiversity on the planet.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, you know, for me, kind of one of the really cool legacies of your involvement here is your name's going to be in that on those little tags and people are going to see your crafty work.
for the first one.
Preparing those specimens. And so then we got out to do the field work. You want to recap a little bit of the different field opportunities we had?
Y'all elaborate on your separate projects. The first week, I went to Lumber River with Lisa, and we were able to do a bat survey. And it was such an experience. It was great. You start at like 5 p.m. and you go to around 3 a.m. You're catching bats in these huge nets and you're taking them out, measuring them.
So nets like butterfly nets? We're just running through the woods?
No, like... not just butterfly nets. You're not just like running blind.
Swinging bats out of the air.
Headlamps, hoping for the best. And I guess you could kind of like elaborate a bit more on like what the nets look like. But basically how I envision them, they're like gigantic. Oh, they're called mist nets, yeah. And they're like these huge, giant poles that you put very large rectangular nets on. And they look, you can barely see them, especially at night.
It's like a giant hair net.
Yeah, you could walk right into them easily.
Yeah, for sure. Right. We almost.
It's like a spider web.
It is like a spider web. And so bats get caught in them, and then I believe we checked every 10 minutes and to see if we caught anything. And then if we did, Miss Lisa would go and untangle the bats from the nets, and I'd hand her a brown paper bag. We'd put the bats in the bag, and then we'd go back to the workstation and make sure they got bands and release them. But it was definitely a lot of fun. Like, that was the first time I did field work at night. And it's like a completely different type of like vibe, but it's fantastic. And I guess you could say a few more words.
Well, I mean, you covered it pretty well. Before we banned them, I mean, before we release them, after we banned them, we also record, of course, important information on them. And yeah, and we have a lot of fun while we're doing it.
And then after I did Lumber River, the next week I went to Asheville with Mike. And we did wood rat trapping, which was really cool. So you go from, like, you know, a coastal setting down in Lumber River, like, more on the east, and then go completely the opposite direction to Asheville and do wood rat trapping, which is on a completely different terrain. It was not flat at all.
It was character building.
It was character building because I figured out how to climb the side of a mountain. But it was definitely really cool. The red rats are ridiculously cute.
Yeah.
So are bats.
I vaguely recall you saying that they were the cutest, the cutest animal you'd ever seen?
Yes, they're
so cute. Maybe the cutest rodent you've
ever
seen? Yeah,
the cutest rodent. They're super cute. They're like little fluffy, I don't know, mice.
Really, well, that's what
mice.
They are, right?
Yeah.
They're just giant mice.
And they're super cute. And so I got to see the process of us finding places to put a trap and figuring out, like, which spaces, like, they would be attracted to and figuring out how to put bait in them. Mm-hmm. And then we would go back every morning and we would check traps after we set them the day before. And once we got one, which we did get quite a few.
Yeah, we caught quite a few.
Really exciting. we were able to, they took like a little ear clip so that they could do genomics work. Mm-hmm. And then also they would take, you know, fur samples, check for fleas, write down a bunch of data. And then, of course, we released them too.
Yeah.
And they would run.
We had a couple good slow motion videos of releases. Yeah.
Especially of the chipmunk that we caught by accident.
Oh, yeah. We did catch some bycatch for sure. Yeah. So
I
think that, you know, that work is with our partnership with the Wildlife Resources Commission, some of the biologists there.
Oh, yeah.
And so I do think. They've been an incredible partner as well. Folks, Danny Ray, Colleen Olfenbuttle, Andrea Shipley have all, and many others, have met with us and provided some raccoon specimens that we helped out with. What else? We did this wood rat trapping. Those are some of our partners on the wood rat project. But then also, I forgot all about, you did have one opportunity that seems pretty cool. Like, I felt as though I missed out, but it was it was not mammal related at all. You want to talk about that day?
Oh gosh. Which day was it?
It was with the WRC in June.
Oh yeah.
Oh right. I forgot about that too.
It wasn't mammal related, was it?
No.
I don't know why I'm blanking.
Honk, honk.
Oh my gosh, yes. I remember now. So we got invited to do geese banding, which was a complete, like, I've never been geese banding in my life. And I was like,
well, actually, I haven't either. Have you,
Lisa? No, most people haven't.
Right. And so I was like, well, why not? Because you never know.
Yeah.
So we went and we first went, was it Westlake?
It was Lake Wheeler.
Lake Wheeler, yeah. And so we went to Lake Wheeler. We were with a bunch of people. And basically, you get these giant, like, metal fences, and everybody holds it in, and you kind of like come together around the geese. And then somebody
corral
goes.
Corral them.
Yeah, corral them like a herd of sheep.
Right.
And then somebody goes in, picks up each goose, and hands it to you. And then you bring it to the banders, and they give you the sex, and then they band number. And so I would help with data recording, but I also was able to
wrangle a few,
which was interesting. I found that there, because we did it at Lake Wheeler, and then we also went, like, in the middle of Raleigh by McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I found there was a very big difference in, like, the temperament of the geese. It was very interesting, because the ones at Lake Wheeler, they would, like, as soon as you let them go, they would run. They're like, yeah, I'm not staying here anymore. Yeah. The ones in Raleigh, they would sit there and hiss at you for a good 5 minutes before they left. And even then, you kind of had to shoo them off because they were just mad.
Yeah, there's some interesting urban ecology
stuff. So yeah, that's really cool.
But yeah, that was definitely an interesting.
Sounds like we should, trap gray squirrels out at Lake Wheeler and trap them downtown Raleigh and see
if there's some temperament differences.
Yeah, for sure.
City mouse and country mouse.
I bet that carries over in a lot of species.
I bet it does because they're feisty.
Yeah.
So, you know what, you sort of touched on this without talking about it. Whatever you were asked to do anytime in the summer, you were like, yeah, I definitely want to try that. You were fearless. Like, you were okay with handling things that want to bite you and that might not want you handling them. And you said yes to everything. And you handled whatever we ask you to do just really, really well.
Yeah.
And if it's okay, I want to jump in because I feel like this is a good segue to branch off into another little side topic real quick. Mike has talked about some of the people that you've worked with. I should point out that the work we did at Lumber River was with state park staff and primarily with Ed Corey, who is inventory biologist with state parks. Anyway, so you've had the opportunity to meet lots of different biologists doing lots of different kinds of work over the summer. And I was real pleased to learn that you found what you learned from them and how they got to where they are, you found that to be very beneficial.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yes. I think that just being able to talk to so many different people within the environmental field, whether they were district biologists, researchers, professors, like hearing how they got to where they were was really beneficial for me because I felt like my whole life I only saw there was one path to get to, being a researcher or getting your PhD or getting your master's degree. There was always one small, like, path you had to take. And it wasn't until I was able to talk to so many people and, like, hear that, there are multiple paths, and it could be straight or it could be all around the place. Mm-hmm. You could go from one thing to the next, and then finally land on, like, what you really love. I think that was, like, beneficial to know because it made you feel a bit like, okay, so I don't have to have, like, I don't have to be the same as everybody else. I could be whoever I want to be, and I don't have to, like, go in a direct path to this thing. I could kind of hop around a bit, and it would still just, like, enrich you as a person.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah, man.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely, yeah. We did kind of have a capstone last week, too. Field work last week was here on some of the property of the museum out at the Prairie Ridge Eco Station.
Mm-hmm.
Eco Station. I always want to say Eco Observatory. Eco Station. And Lisa, maybe you could just cover a little bit of the background info, but that was a big participation for you because, I mean, this is a long-term project, right, Lisa?
Yeah. Yeah, again, your name's going to be associated with the data collection there forever. So we started this long-term mark recapture study of small mammals that live at our Prairie Ridge Ecostation. We have 150 grids distributed through 150 traps distributed through three grids of 50 traps each, and those are permanent locations and in different habitat types. And we trap seasonally, and we started this 11 years ago. And over the years, we've had lots of students come out and help. And we had a, you know, along with work stoppage and lots of other realms, we weren't able to do it for a while. And so we were glad to be able to restart it this mm-hmm. spring. And you want to say anything about what you – so I will go ahead and say that we set traps in the evening. We don't want them to be open during the day. We don't want traps – or small mammals trapped caught in these metal traps where mm-hmm. they could succumb to heat exhaustion or whatever, mm-hmm. Or fire ants. So we open them in the evening, you know, shortly before dusk, and then check them very early in the morning. So you want to talk about what you saw and how you helped?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, because we started by just, like, putting them out and then later opening all of them right before, because like Lisa said, we want to be very careful and make sure that like none of the mammals are harmed in any way because that the traps are out for too long. So put it like we would get bait and we put them in each of the traps. You would kind of check the springboard and it has like a pressure point in the back that when they step on it, the trap closes. So we would check them every morning, like she said, very early. So it's a very different type of field work from wood rat trapping and batting, all different time schedules, which mm-hmm. is fun.
You could work around the clock in mammalogy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, that's the fun of it.
Yeah. Well, and when you're as young and energetic as you are, Adrian, you could actually work through the clock. Lisa and I are like,
numb.
Yeah. We're either diurnal or not. We're only active during the day or nocturnal at night. You One know, of we. We partition our niches that way.
But it was like, it was really cool because the three fields are completely different.
Yeah.
Like one of them's very woodsy. The other one's more blackberries than anything else. It wasn't like always like that, but like, you know, mm-hmm. kind of became a blackberry yeah. field. And then the other one's a lot of tall grass. And so you get to go to each place and you kind of get to see what type of things you catch there. Mm-hmm. And so we caught a few where they...
White-footed mice.
Right-footed mice. And they're super cute. Yeah. They're adorable.
Well, they're like small wood rats.
Yeah, they're like really small wood rats. We're just going to compare everything to a wood rat. And, like, we were able to go every morning, and I got to help with data collection, and I got to ear tag them, which was a cool experience because you're kind of giving them a little earring.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you did a great job.
You did.
Yeah.
And then we would release them. And sometimes you catch the same animal multiple times. Or one from a while ago, which mm-hmm. is also cool to see because yep. you can kind of look
That's why they're called like, mark recaptures.
Oh, yeah. You can look back and be like, oh, we've seen you before.
Right, right,
so,
right.
So definitely it was fun being in Raleigh and, like, a place that, like, I live close to and, like, knowing, oh, wow, we have all this, like, diversity.
Native wow. small
right.
mammals.
Right.
Yeah. There's another species you forgot.
Oh, my gosh. Pyramiscus.
The cotton rats.
Oh, my God. They're... The male cotton rats has something to say every time we caught them. Talk about feisty. But they were also, they came in like a different colors than I thought they would. And they were very interesting to observe like the behavior between like different sexes and seeing like juveniles. That was like a cool catch to get like a young one. And just being able to compare in each field, like, what type of things we mm-hmm. got and, like, seeing how it differs based off of, like, what the ecosystem is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sure sounds like you gained a diversity of skills.
Oh, yes.
Anything in particular that you were really thrilled about or excited to apply for, you know, apply in your own career as you voyage down this path for conservation?
Yeah. One of, like, the big things that I feel like I took away from this, and it might not necessarily be a skill, but, like, more of, like, an observation. I, like, got to see how you and Lisa were able to work with so many people mm-hmm. within the environmental field. And all of them had like different jobs, were in different sectors, had different projects. And yet everybody kind of worked together in a certain way. And like watching you guys talk to them, plan things with them, create new projects together, contacting people you know, I think that was really helpful because that's not something you see very often. You don't see a lot of like the behind the scenes work that gets to these projects or the people that get to it.
Mm-hmm,
so I think just like learning how to reach out to people and be able to talk to other people about new projects and like work together, I think that's a really important skill that I was able to learn. And I was so glad to meet so many cool and interesting people this summer and just hear what they're passionate about because everybody's very passionate.
And they're all just a subtle different passions, which is nice.
It's
and
great.
That's why, I mean, conservation as a whole and ecology and mammalogy, I mean, we're all in this together and we all got into this field presumably for the same reason, right? And it's for the pay.
That's the way.
No, I mean, we all got into this field because we want to, I don't know, make the world a better place, right?
Yeah,
we want to save species probably
is
really what it comes down to. And so collaboration is the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you got to witness that and see that.
And recognize it. Without us, we didn't have to point this out to you. We don't do this singly. Like, none of us is out there just on an island by ourselves doing this. You know,
there's
a lot of collaboration, always.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think in terms of that collaboration and networking and this field broadly, I think, you know, I would love to hear your comments as a Black woman trying to get into the ecological field or conservation. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you feel that you've been able to navigate to get into that? Or what do you think you learned from this that might help you, but also help other young Black women, young Black men, and other underrepresented groups in STEM and in conservation? Because I think that's really important and part of our goal with starting this type of internship and program.
Yeah, I think a lot of it starts with coming down to exposure at like a young age. And I know for me personally, like if it was my mom when I was in middle school or elementary school, like she had to advocate really hard to get me into higher level or advanced STEM classes or like be able to take extra science classes. And that was one of the big things. Like I just had to keep pushing against administration, like, hey, let me in this class.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be able to take these like science classes. Let me be part of like the STEM field. And I like not everybody can do that. And I think that there needs to be a change in the perception starting very young within school systems of like who can be in these fields and like, who are you going to invite into your, like, special science clubs?
Right.
Like, I think people really need to think about it because I think there's a perception that maybe there's not any interest when in all actuality, maybe there's just not enough outreach towards these people.
And exposure,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Letting them know that, like, this is a field that you can be in. And then throughout this internship, everybody I've met in the ecological field has been fantastic. They're super nice. And I've been able to be out in the field with other people. And I think even just me showing up to certain settings, like, provided a new kind of exposure in a way of like, I've never seen someone like her in this field. Like, that's a new thought process that people are going to have to start getting in their minds. But there's also, and I've talked to you, and I also talked to Lisa about this, about how there's this issue of when you go out into the field as somebody who's underrepresented, there's always this overlooming risk that's always there. It's like, I might not be able to be as welcomed or accepted into a space as other people. And so that's one of the big things that like I've been like pondering, how do I tell other people in underrepresented groups, like, oh, this is a great field for them, and if they're interested, they should try it.
Right.
And, like, still be able to, like, I have to, I can't deny that there are spaces where you're not going to feel welcome.
Right.
A lot of field work has to do, we have to be in rural areas.
And some remote areas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so whether Accepted there has always been one of the big things on my mind. Like, would I be comfortable going out here by myself?
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it's no.
Right.
And I think when it comes to solving that problem, it's very hard because it's not so much an issue that's within the people who are in ecology or the people who are in the field, but more with the world itself.
Yeah.
So I think one thing that Lisa and me talked about was, like, people just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see it at all. They
right.
don't see a Black woman going out into the field taking water samples or doing
right.
surveys. Like, they don't see it. And so, like, part of it is exposure. Part of it's, like, going anyways, which is, like, I can't, in my right mind, like, suggest
right.
that people do that.
right, 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 yeah.
But I think it's one of those big things that it's, like, definitely a question that needs to be talked about, that needs to be pondered within the ecological field. How can we make these spaces more safe for people like me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the most important things that I've thought about this summer, and like how if I want underrepresented groups to get in this field, or if I want them to be interested and pursue it,
right?
Like, how am I supposed to make this safe for them to do so?
Right.
Right. And so I think, gosh, it's so complicated. It's mm-hmm. just not a simple linear stepwise thing to fix.
Right.
I think as more fantastically wonderful, smart, kind, amazing people like you get into this field and it becomes more normal for people who live in the areas where we might be conducting surveys, as it becomes more normal, as people see it more, then it's not going to be such an oddity and people aren't going to feel threatened by right. seeing a Black person in the field.
Right.
But how do we get there?
How
so, like, there? You know, what are the risks that you and others are willing to take to help make these changes?
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's asking a lot. This is not something that Mike and I have ever had to consider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe me to some extent, but I've never been in a threatening situation in the field.
Right. Right.
I have friends who have.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, just as a female. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, how do we begin to make – we want more people mm-hmm. like Adrian in conservation and mm-hmm. in STEM fields. And how do we tell them that this is okay? How do we make the space for them? And this
right.
is why we wanted to have this conversation today.
Yeah.
Right.
And hopefully to inspire other people to start having these kind of conversations
right.
too.
Yeah, because I think these conversations are, you know, somewhat uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
but I think we have to embrace the uncomfort so that we can get past that. And
right.
I think that, you know, CTNC, for everything that they've done to mm-hmm. start this program, I think is certainly one of the right steps forward.
Oh, yeah.
And I am certain that you felt welcomed by everyone that we worked with and
oh, yeah.
interacted with over
yeah.
the field. So I think that the field, you know, we want you here.
Right.
And
there's definitely you can tell because, I mean, even from me doing field work or helping somebody out outside from when I was in middle and high school
mm-hmm.
has, like, changed.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are within the job have changed. Like, there's still, like, a ways to go in sense, but also, like, it's one of those moments where you look back and that there has been a lot of progress, and that if we start making the right steps towards things, like, it's going to get better and more people are going to be interested. And the more exposure,
yeah.
the more people that get the chance or are given the chance to do something like CTNC or summer
yeah.
ventures or something STEM related,
mm-hmm. yeah.
there will be more people in these fields. It's just like you have to make sure the opportunity is open for them to get to that point. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's important to do that. And I think just creating internships, creating opportunities, creating like free science programs,
right.
all
yeah.
big steps in towards what we need.
And I think it sounds like we definitely have to start earlier. With
yeah.
kids, right?
Yeah.
So
much early.
Yeah.
Because, like, interest starts very young.
Yeah.
And kids will see something and they'll love it. And so you got to make sure you give them the opportunity to have a passion about something or have a passion about STEM. So I think just starting younger in schools, having outreach, letting anybody who wants to take science classes or STEM classes or be part of a science club, that they should be able to take it.
Right.
And it shouldn't be, like, dictated based off of first impressions or mm-hmm. how you look. So I think even just starting that young and, like, allowing kids to know that they can do anything and they can be anyone, And it doesn't matter, like, your race or your gender or your sexuality. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You can just do it.
Absolutely.
I think that's really important to put into younger grades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. Awesome. Well, I mean, that kind of covered it. You know, I mean, you really hit it there on the head, I think, hit the nail on the head, I guess. So I appreciate your perspective on all of this. And I wasn't sure if you felt like there was anything else you wanted to say for the young Black women or other young underrepresented communities and folks and boys and girls and everyone for that matter.
Yeah. I say never let anybody tell you can't do anything.
Yeah.
I would say keep pushing forward because you're going to be your biggest advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you never know until you try.
Right.
Like, apply. Try.
Right, right, right.
Like, my motto is you're not any worse off than you were if you apply or you try out for something.
Right.
So I'd say keep pushing. I'd say, like, keep working. And, like, don't forget that, like, you are worthy to be in these positions. You are worthy to be in these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, always keep that in your mind.
Yeah.
And another thing I will add, and this is something that I've seen do throughout the summer, when you make this step ahead, you look back and bring the other people with you. You've reached out to so many people who are taken the next step in their education or whatever and helped them because, you know, they need the help. So I've seen you do this. I think that's an important thing,
yeah,
too. Once you move forward, don't forget to look back and bring some others with you.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
If you know, like, an opportunity or you did something where, like, for example, I got to do this internship.
Right.
I'm definitely going to tell other people about it. Like, hey.
Well, that's hopefully people are listening and they're going to say, and we're going to be flooded with intern applications. And then we're going to, you know.
Like, yeah, I think it's good, like, just telling people about it, like, mm-hmm, oh, hey, I heard that you are interested in being outdoors or you like,
right,
this type of field. Like, oh, I've got the internship or I've got the program,
right,
for you. So
yeah.
I think even just like word of mouth, mm-hmm, it helps. It does.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing I will plug real quickly then is that the North Carolina BAT Working Group wants to be a part of this and help recruit an undergrad from some underrepresented group,
mm-hmm,
and sponsor them to attend the Southeastern BAT Diversity Network annual meetings. And
yes,
so this is something that we're also trying to become more active, more proactive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, and hopefully if someone hears this and wants to learn more about working with BATs as a career, then they should, mm-hmm, find us.
Yeah, absolutely. And the American Society of Mammalogists especially, mm-hmm, too, has also started grants and scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I certainly think we're, you know, taking bold steps forward. I think,
yeah,
there's a lot more we can do. And again, I think you pointing out that we need to start much earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the most important thing because, you know, you guys are the future. And we need to make sure everyone realizes that humans and nature, mm-hmm, are one and the same. We're part of the natural world.
Right.
Exactly.
And, like, let's not lose touch with that.
Exactly.
I want to ask an additional question, sort of a slightly different direction. Is there any, during your internship, was there anything you learned or experienced that was a bit of an unexpected? I mean, I guess you couldn't really know exactly what to expect. So that's the fun of it. every day's
dynamic.
Oh, yeah. I think.
But, well, either good or bad.
Yeah.
Besides learning about stinging nettle.
Yeah, yeah, that was. And falling down the side of a mountain. But, you know.
No interns were harmed over the course
harmed.
Of this
no,
internship.
We were good. We're set. but I think one of the biggest things that, like, came as a surprise to me was just like how much fun people in the STEM field could be. Because I feel like I always had this like stereotypical perception that everybody was like had no personality.
And rigid.
And rigid and like didn't want to talk or didn't want to have fun or like enjoy themselves or anything. Mm-hmm. And then like I was able to come to the museum and I met so many people with dynamic personalities who were like amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was like a very nice change of pace from what I was used to seeing. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times maybe it comes off of like, well, if I go into the STEM field, like I'm not going to like enjoy myself. And right. I think that is, it's a lie. There's so many fun people. You meet so many like cool personalities. And I think it's all about finding a space that you feel comfortable in mm-hmm. and finding like people that you mesh really well with. Mm-hmm. And I lucked out and I had that this summer. So I was like, finally, somebody who gets my humor. So definitely that was like probably the biggest shock and it was like the most pleasant Aww. Surprise I could
Oh,
make.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. Well, do you have anything else you want to say or plug or mention?
I mean, I just say that there is a future for underrepresented groups within conservation fields and that make sure to like keep looking forward. And I believe in all of you. So
thank you.
I wish everyone good luck.
Yeah. OK.
Thank you so much, Adrian.
Yeah. On behalf of the Mammal Unit, you know, we want to thank you because you've been truly a delight to work with this summer.
Oh, y'all gonna make me cry. Thank you guys so much for just an amazing summer and letting me have the time of my life. Like, I couldn't ask for anything better. And, like, I'm never going to forget this summer.
Okay.
Nor will we.
Nor will we, yeah.